This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. I know it's eagerly anticipated by many of you podcast aficionados because it's an opportunity to hear your questions answered by yours truly, along with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, who has become a podcast celebrity in her own right. She joins me each week for our weekly Q&A with Layla, and she has her own podcast. Usually gets posted on Fridays. How you doing, Layla?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thanks. I recently, you know, I had an interesting weekend because I flew down to Orlando for a conference, and there were a variety of speakers, and you know, we also took a tour of a very nice supplement manufacturing facility. And I was just very impressed with the quality control. You know, people who say there's no regulations on supplements, it's like a free fire zone, you don't know what you're getting. Just the level of care and scrutiny and quality control that they exerted there was just remarkable. We talked to the head of their quality control department, who is a chemist, guy with great esprit and creativity in terms of how he analyzes. For example, say you get a batch of EGCG extract from green tea, and you want to know, is it pure? Well, they have very, very sophisticated chemical analysis to determine if the stuff is the right stuff, if it's free of contaminants, if there's no lead. They even have special X-ray devices to determine if, you know, on the assembly line, if a piece, perhaps a little shard of metal, fell into the production line. Incidentally, I was making meatballs the other day, and I bit into the meatball, and there was like a little shard of metal. And I mean, I had gotten the ground meat, and I'd gotten the cauliflower, which was cauliflower rice as opposed to rice as a way to hold the meatballs together. And I don't know where that shard came from, but it's, you know, kind of concerning that in the production missed. But it doesn't get missed at, you know, in the manufacture of this particular vitamin line, so it was good products. The company is Zymogen, Xymogen, and several of our products are from that company. And just amazing, you know, like that, you know, a warehouse that looked like a giant Home Depot with, you know, piled to the rafters with raw materials, barrels, and, you know, like huge, like fertilizer bags full of, you know, vitamin B6 and B12 and ascorbic acid, and all these get mixed in a blender into different supplements. Very fascinating to see that. Anyway, Dr. Alessio Fasano was a speaker down there, and you know who he is, of course.
He's the foremost authority on gluten and celiac
gluten tolerance.
Disease.
Yeah, and so he gave a lecture that was great because he's a really good lecturer. On not just celiac disease, but non-gluten celiac intolerance. But going beyond that, it doesn't have to be gluten that's causing the problem with leaky gut. The whole thing was about leaky gut. And he coined, as you may recall, he coined a very famous meme, which is, the gut is not like Las Vegas. What happens there doesn't necessarily stay there. In other words, if bad stuff happens in the gastrointestinal tract, then that stuff can traverse the gut barriers via altered intestinal permeability, or leaky gut syndrome, and then it can get into systemic circulation, affecting the brain, affecting the blood vessels, affecting all the organs of the body. You know, thyroid autoimmunity, arthritis, yeah. MS. You know, think of an autoimmune disorder, and there's a gut component. So it was just a really great lecture, and you know, I had a good educational experience down there.
Wonderful. And how was the weather?
The weather was, you know, it was murky in the morning, and then the fog burned off. There was actually rain the first day. And then I spent so much time inside in lectures that I went outside once just to actually see the sun and stand there in shirt sleeves, because I haven't done that outside in New York for several months. It was just, I felt like, I looked to my side, and on the stucco next to me, there was a lizard, little lizard, mm-hmm. basking in the sun, and I felt like a lizard warming my cold blooded body up in the Florida sun. And I had about 15 minutes of that, at most, during that weekend.
Still therapeutic.
No, and I managed to swim in a pool outside, uh-huh. which was fun. Okay, so, but in terms of,
outside.
Yeah, got outside. Yeah, it's good.
That's great. Maybe I'll take a trip to Florida.
Oh, definitely should.
I can't wait till spring.
It wasn't a recreational thing so much, but for me, I find it recreational to go to a great, you know, series of lectures and learn, you know, bring back
wonderful.
Useful stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's with me. Mm-hmm. And so let's proceed to questions. A reminder to our listeners that you can send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. radioprogram@AOL.com. And then there's about four week backlog, because we get a lot of questions, and eventually we work our way through them. And if you keep listening to the podcast, you'll hear your question answered, right?
Yeah. Okay. We've got an email from Jason. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I recently came across an article that you wrote in relation to a product called ModuCare. I'm very interested in purchasing this product, as I suffered from chronic fatigue syndrome for about 10 years now, and I believe this could help me greatly in balancing my immune system. In the article, I read that it can lower cortisol, and is that something that I have to be aware of, because I have a low cortisol output as it is. So before I go ahead and purchase this product, can you tell me if it's safe to take, because it can lower cortisol? Interesting. Well, ModuCare is basically plant sterols and sterolins, mm-hmm. which help to maintain a healthy balance of T helper 1 and 2 white blood cells. And it modulates the stress response by supporting DHEA and cortisol ratio. If it modulates the stress response, Dr. Hoffman, do you think that it would make a low cortisol even lower?
Not necessarily. You know, and I think that I think that this ModuCare may fall into the category of nutrients that is an adaptogen. In other words, if your cortisol is way high, it may bring it into line, and if it's too low, it may actually support optimization of your cortisol production, which is important in terms of energy and stamina and, you know, fighting off allergies and immunity. So there is an autoimmune component in some cases in chronic fatigue syndrome, and that's why we use things like low-dose naltrexone. LDN sometimes helps to tame an out-of-control immune response by upregulating endorphins and enkephalins, which are endogenous opiates that tend to help modulate immunity. There's also something called a TH1-TH2 helper cell imbalance, and we're getting a little technical here, but several studies have shown that patients with CFS have an imbalance in the T helper system. The tendency is to have low activity in the TH1 helper cell type, while they have raised TH2 helper cell types. And so you can do kind of a reset on your these are lymphocytes that may be activated or out of balance, and that MagiCare may help to reset that. That's, it kind of sounds kind of vague, but this is called modulating the immune system. Okay.
Yeah, not too high, not too low. Really finding Goldilocks point, right.
And the fact that MagiCare can enhance the activity of the Th1 helper cells means that it increases the activity of natural killer cells against viral infections. And since we speculate that in some cases, not all, but chronic fatigue syndrome may be a many-splintered thing with a lot of different causes and components, and there may be different subtypes of that, but some types of chronic fatigue syndrome may be chronic viral infections, it's possible that the MagiCare may be helpful in helping to fend off the viral component of these. Okay?
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, Jason, thank you for your questions.
I would say it's sort of a B-list supplement for chronic fatigue syndrome. It's not the first thing I would think of, but I think it might be a useful accoutrement to the treatment of that.
Yeah.
By the way, made by the same company that makes kyolic aged garlic extract. Good company, Ajinomoto.
Right. What else would we use for chronic fatigue? I'm thinking things like carnitine and ubiquinol. And
nicotinamide, riboside nowadays because it's an energy enhancing thing. Mm-hmm. Certainly magnesium for as a cofactor in energy production. But there's two ways to look at it. One is like, okay, you're tired, let's jazz you up with things. You know, just on a on a fatigue basis, maybe it's a mitochondrial disorder, let's give you the things that help to support the mitochondria. But then there's this aspect of it where you want to drill down and see, you know, what's actually the cause? Is it a microbiome or gut issue? Is it a neurotransmitter imbalance? Is it, is there an allergic component? Is there a hormonal component? You know, these are all, in fact, I wrote a book that kind of presaged this discussion many years ago, now nearly 20 years ago or more, Tired All the Time, How to Regain Your Lost Energy. And looked at the various subtypes of fatigue and, blood sugar, insulin resistance, of course, being one, inflammatory fatigue, and, kind of trying to categorize it and then attack the underlying cause. I mean, certainly a good strategy to take things like, there are supplements that have a reputation for enhancing energy. But
how strong is the relation of Epstein-Barr virus to chronic fatigue syndrome?
It's very sketchy because when you have chronic fatigue syndrome, it seems that your viruses may be reactivated. An example of which is, under stress, when you get a cold, you'll get mouth sores. Well, the mouth sores aren't the cold virus. There are other viruses that are co-activated that have been staying in your body. Herpes type 1, perhaps, which is oral herpes. It's not clear that the Epstein-Barr is the cause. The Epstein-Barr activation may be the consequence of something else that activates it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, the classic Epstein-Barr virus infection is mono. That's clear cut, and people experience tremendous fatigue. But the question is what they used to call chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic Epstein-Barr. But that was an oversimplification because you can demonstrate, you virtually anyone you test, you can demonstrate.
Interesting. All right. Thank you, Jason, for your question. We have an email from Michael, who sends us actually a small article by a Dr. Bauman. Let's see here. Michael writes, Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'd be very interested in your comments regarding what Dr. Bauman said about muscle atrophy and the potential or the lack for compensation. And do you think, can we regain muscle mass after age 60 is the question. And Michael is also asking, do you think that adding such supplements like whey protein or other branched-chain amino acids or creatine would refute his comment that no new muscle cells can be developed after a certain age? And let me read the quote to you from Dr. Bauman.
Yeah, let's hear what he has to say.
He says, young people who work out add new muscle fibers and also plump up their existing ones.
Mm-hmm.
Older people do not. We increase the size of our atrophied muscle fibers with exercise, but for a variety of physiological reasons, do not add to the number of fibers,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Bauman says.
Okay.
Hmm.
Well, first of all, I don't like,
yeah.
I never say never, and I think that there may be exceptions to the rule. And, you know, and 60 seems like a kind of an arbitrary cutoff point. You know, what, is it for some people, you know, 48? Is it for other people, you know, 67? It's not clear that their nature has built in a chronometer into our bodies that decides that no new muscle cells, you know, no new muscle cells for you. You know, it's the muscle cell, not, the muscle cell Nazi, you know, says no new muscle cells for you. So, however, there may be something to this theory, which is that while young people can elaborate new muscle cells, which is certainly an adjunct to strength, maybe older people can only strengthen existing muscle cells and thereby increase strength and maybe muscle volume without actually increasing. I don't think he's taking issue with
muscle
the possibility
fibers.
That one can train past the age of 60 and get stronger. I think that he's going to buy into that. That may suggest an upper limit on the degree of strengthening that you can do, so that, I mean, clearly a 20-year-old, you know, college football player is going to have a great deal more potential for increasing strength, you know, when they go through a strength training program than a, you know, 70-year-old. I mean, I think that's kind of self-evident, right? I mean, you see these amazingly strong, well-conditioned kids, you know, who play football, and that's the result of concerted strength training programs, very scientific. Let's mention, though, that, of course, the opposite happens is that the vast majority of people are losing muscle mass at the rate of 10% per year on average past the age of, they say, 50.
Like 40
or 50. Even 40,
okay.
50, depends, you know, on your perspective. And that's called sarcopenia.
Depends on how sedentary you are, too, sure.
And that's sarcopenia. So we're all past a certain age trying to fend off muscle loss. And, you know, I do strength training with less weight than I did when I was 40. And I marvel at, like, wow, I was able to do that at 40. I'm not sure I want to do that at 64, because my goal is not to be big and super strong. My goal is to be flexible and lean for more aerobic tasks. But, you know, there's definitely a diminution in strength. So, you know, what are the proposed supplements that help that? Creatine certainly can help support muscle.
Yeah.
What else was suggested there?
And the branched chain amino acids.
Like
in whey protein.
Yep, yep.
Or in, you know, your regular food protein.
Leucine also has been shown to be, leucine on its own has been shown to help support muscle in older individuals. Just leucine supplementation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's hormones. I mean, DHA and testosterone. There's
yeah,
no question.
I mean, when you're making that comparison between a college football player and, say, a 70-year-old man, the levels of testosterone will also be different between those two. So hormones have to play a part here, too.
Right.
Yeah. I imagine not just about muscle fiber. But, you know, this just makes me recall a much older study where they went into a nursing home amongst 80 and 90 year olds who were either using a walker or a cane, put them on a strength training regimen, and most of them were able to discard their walker or their cane, which is tremendous. I mean, it's just because of this claim that maybe you don't make more muscle fiber, and like you said, never say never, is not a reason to not try to.
right.
I think strength training going forward is the fountain of youth. If you want to ensure that you never become feeble, it's important to use our muscles, otherwise we lose them. What we don't use, we lose. So.
And I have to say that in my own personal experiences, I'm trying some things that, you know, unfortunately I didn't do enough of early on because I would have built a stronger foundation, but I'm doing certain exercises that I didn't do. For example, squats. And I find that squat strength is actually improving, which suggests that strength can improve past the age of 60. You know, there may be upward limits to that, but, you know, I'm hoping to, as I continue, to maybe reach the, you know, my goal is I'd love to squat my body weight, but that would be 160 pounds. You know, I'm up to about, you know, 90 or 100 or 110 now. And that's a little still, I mean, which is
that's
folks,
impressive.
But folks, if you are not familiar with that, you know, type of exercise or strength training, there are people who squat in hundreds and hundreds of pounds.
Yeah.
And I've seen lean, you know, not, you know, really muscle-bound young women do amazing feats with squats if they're well-conditioned, you know, hundreds of pounds. So, you know, it's just a relative, you know, weak suit on my part that I'm trying to address.
Excellent. Oh, what? Michael, thank you very, very much for the very thoughtful question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we love questions that, you know, point to optimization. That's really an important theme here on Intelligent Medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got an email from Linda. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I have autoimmune thyroid, and my doctor says I only need 45 micrograms of vitamin K2 with the dose of 5,000 IU of vitamin D3 I take daily.
Right.
However, I thought the recommendation was between 90 and 180 micrograms of K2 with D3. You were right, Linda.
Well, I'm not sure what this has to do with the autoimmune thyroid disorder.
Yeah.
I mean, it just happens to be that she has that.
Right.
But just in general, I used to dose 45 and then 90, and now I dose 180.
Yes. Yep. Me too.
We have 90 microgram vitamin K2 that we suggest patients take one twice daily for heart protection, but also for osteoporosis support.
Right, right. I believe we also have the 180 microgram dose.
Oh, we do? Okay,
well,
so we could take one a day.
Take it once a day, yes.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yes. I believe that's the latest one that that we currently have. So it makes it easier for those people who don't want to take multiple pills throughout the day, although two doses is really nothing compared to much more than that, but very, very important. Yeah. And Linda has actually a second question. I have post-nasal drip minutes after I start eating.
Mm-hmm.
I have been on an autoimmune protocol for the past 4 months and have been paleo, but I've been paleo for about 2.5 to 3 years now. I started about 1.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My doctor didn't appear concerned, but I wonder if I need to be.
Well, you know, it's not an allergic response. What that is it's actually an autonomic response. Which means that when you eat, just the act of eating flips the switch on your autonomic nervous system from sympathetic to parasympathetic. And this is called, I just said the word to you before.
You did.
Right. Postprandial rhinitis or...
A post-nasal drip.
Well, it's okay. It's not a post-nasal drip. It's actually a gustatory rhinitis. In other words, when you're, what makes your salivary glands produce lots of saliva. There's sometimes a link or carryover to your to the mucus in your nose. So it's everything gets activated. The nerve plexi are interconnected. It's a parasympathetic dominant response, and that's also why eating sort of produces a relaxation response in the parasympathetic. So, you know, I can't think of a natural way to overcome that other than to take something that's a decongestant. And, you know, in the past, we used to have a Phaedra as a natural decongestant. I guess you can buy an over-the-counter decongestant like Sudafed. But, you know, that can make your heart race and make you keep you up if you take it later at night. And it'll actually dry your mucous membranes.
It'll make you very, very dry.
Yeah.
I'm thinking another reason for gustatory rhinitis could be, like, for example, you know, our apartment is quite dry in the winter because of the radiators going, right?
Yeah.
So coupled with dry air, waking up in the morning and having something hot to eat, whether it's an omelet, a hot cup of coffee or tea, that kind of loosens everything up again.
Yeah, that could be.
And may cause more, you know.
Yeah, but so some people are hooked up that way. And it's, again, the doctor was complacent because there's nothing to worry about. But there's also not that much can be done about it. I mean, it's a bit of a nuisance. It may it may interfere with your taste sensations during a meal. Alcohol seems to trigger it quite often. You know, one could also look at the possibility that she's got histamine intolerance, like high levels of histamine that are ready to mobilize at the slightest instigation, creating a great deal of mucus secretion. Maybe a low histamine diet and some measures to curb excess histamine could be a backdoor way to curtailing this. No.
All right.
All right. This
Very
is
interesting.
We have an inflection point here. It's a logical place to divide our podcast into two parts. That's what we do. We're going to suggest that you forward to part two to hear the rest of today's Q&A with Layla. And Layla, what can we expect to hear in part two?
Can you speak to this study that says eating turmeric as a spice is better because the supplement doesn't have the same impact?
Okay, we'll speak to that. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's been part of our Intelligent Medicine podcast series, and we'll be right back with part two.